joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here is Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
I'd like to have the longevity of those Pittsburgh coaches. They've had three in like 40 years.
It's incredible, isn't it? Like, yeah. It is. Like, Bill Cowher was there for a long, long time. And I don't think they fired him. I'd have to look that up. I feel like he just said, I'm out. I think he retired.
Oh, yeah, but they didn't. I don't think they fired Chuck Knoll either.
Right. They hate firing people in Pittsburgh.
So it's like you become the coach there, and you're like literally, I think it's three coaches in 35 years.
It is.
Something.
Yeah. It is. With a lot of Super Bowls. And success. Yeah. It's not like they've been terrible, and you can't figure out why they won't decide to go in a different direction. They obviously have a pretty good vetting process, and they picked the right guy. Because Cowher was great, and Tomlin's been great. And that is a luxury that very few teams in pro sports have, where they just commit to a guy, and they know it's going to work.
You know, look at the bad teams in any sport. They've had eight coaches in 12 years. And then you're like, oh, and these guys have had 3 and 35.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you compare it to Cleveland, Ray. I mean, the Browns have had how many guys in the last decade?
A zillion.
I can't even think to name them all. And
they'll have a new one next
September. And another
new
one upcoming. And you wonder why they're always in transition and turmoil. They don't have that stability. But they've got to hire the right guy at some
point. That's the thing. It's right. I got to believe a lot of that is they just didn't hire the right guy.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, we've been talking about it here in Toronto, where with Keefe, they are pulling a 180. They're taking a chance on a guy who's never coached in the NHL. Prior to him, it was Babcock, Carlisle, Wilson, Maurice. Like, all four of them are, like, top 20 all-time in wins mm-hmm. and have been around forever. It's not like they were bad coaches, but it couldn't work here. Like, they didn't. I don't think they made the wrong choice. They just, for whatever reason, in Toronto, they couldn't make it work.
But don't you think going forward, the grizzled old guys, and not because of the stuff that's going on in the game, it's just players aren't listening to that. Like, it's already been talked about in Montreal. Claude Julien, great guy and everything, great coach, but these guys just aren't listening.
Do you see that, Ray? Do you see that as a legitimate issue in the league?
Well, yes, in that if you're a veteran guy, you better figure out how to connect with your players. Because it's like having the smartest teacher in your grade 9 math class, and you can't figure out what he's talking about, doesn't mean that he's a good teacher. It means he's really smart, and nobody understands what the hell he's talking about. If you're an older coach, or you're a hard-ass coach, you better figure out a different way to deliver your message. And it might be through younger assistants to keep yourself relevant, to keep yourself up to date with what these guys think about and do. Like, I was told with one of the things that was really shocking when Willie Desjardins was coaching the Canucks was that he didn't have a connection, a way to connect to the first-year players. Like at that time, I think it was Jared McCann and Jake Virtanen. And I'm not talking about this stuff going on now. I meant just like a personal connection. He didn't understand why are they all on their phones all the time, right? Like you've got to be connected and relevant to what the players are talking about and thinking about. Otherwise, we're just going to tune the coach out. And, yeah, I see it as an issue for sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating transition we're going through right now. Now, there are some extreme examples, obviously. Bill Peters, that's not about not connecting, as we know. No. But Mike Babcock is dealing with, you know, his reputation continues to be trampled on. And more stories are coming out. Chris Chelios was on Spit and Chicklets podcast today, I believe, and told the story about Johan Franzen and the way Babcock was treating him. And Franzen came out in Europe and said, yeah, it's true. And honestly, 2 weeks ago when he was let go, week and a half ago, I thought if he wanted another job the next day, he could have gotten it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to happen now. I really don't, Ray. I don't know if Babcock's going to get back in.
Well, especially with some of those quotes from Franzen. It's not like, yeah, it was kind of an uncomfortable situation. He said he's the worst human I've ever been around. Like, when you hear stuff like that, who wants to bring that into their environment?
Well, I would say if they are going to, like, if he wants to coach again and if somebody wants to hire him, there's the time frame changes quite considerably. And I would think one of the... and I'm curious what you guys think. So I would think one of the things that will immediately change. I don't know exactly how, but the way that teams interview their coaches and what they ask and what they look for and what they're trying to establish will completely change. And so if you think Mike Babcock's a good coach, you would have to discuss with him, okay, you've got these complaints and issues with ex-players that they keep making public. How do I know that's not going to be the case again? Have you learned? Have you taken courses? Have you tried to understand? Have you learned sensitivity training? I don't even know what it is, but I think teams are going to demand that from their coaches going forward.
And do you think teams, Ray, because, you know, times change, standards and what's acceptable has changed, and if a coach, whether it's Mike Babcock or someone else, says, yeah, you know, I treated people differently back then, I wouldn't do that now, it's not right now, it was more the norm then, you think a lot of teams would be like, okay, I can appreciate that you've changed the way you behaved before, you acknowledged it, and we're okay with that as long as you don't do it again?
No, I think there's going to have to be more, Mike. Like, I think there's going to have to be, okay, would you be willing to go through this training? Would you be willing to do,
you know,
like at the draft, they give these kids those psychological tests. I don't know, you know, what are you more scared of, a thousand penguins or one gorilla or whatever the questions are? You got to try and figure out what the hell it all means. I think there will be deeper testing, deeper search to make sure that you take away some of the variables. Like, you can't just take a guy's word, but you have to see, has this pattern of behavior changed? And I don't know how it's going to be done, but I've got this feel that the hiring process is going to become far different than it's been in the past. And I've never been in a coach's hiring meeting. I just think it's going to be way different than it's been.
Well, that brings into play a party that has not been brought up primarily throughout this conversation, and that's the GM, because there's got to be an evolution here from the GM for that to happen. Now, they may think, I have to do this because of PR, I have to do this because the players are going to respond to this.
Or maybe they just have to get away from the idea, I need to get my guy, and just make a panic move because that the coach is not his guy.
But it's not even about that. It's a type of guy. We know this throughout the history of sports, and this is not exclusive to hockey. There have been GMs who have turned on their players and said, I need to go get a guy that's going to kick them in the ass. I got to go get a guy who they're going to hate. Like, they know when you hire these guys. Well, the players are going to hate this guy
You
hire him.
St. Louis, now, they didn't hate Craig Berube, but one of the reasons he got the job last year, because they wanted a guy who was going to be harder. Whatever that means, harder. They went for a guy who was the opposite, trying to find someone that would challenge his players more. And it obviously worked out very well. I'm sure they all got along brilliantly. But the idea where you're trying to find a different personality to squeeze guys or to make them uncomfortable or take away their comfort zone or whatever it is.
Is that going to change?
That might change.
Well, it might change, but will, don't you think, Mike, like, what will change, you know, is that the way you are hard on your players...
Right, the way you define being hard, yes.
Yeah, it will be different. Yeah. And it's not about whether some guy's on the power play or not, and he doesn't like that quote-unquote treatment. We're not talking about that. We're talking about something far more significant. Because players and coaches, since the beginning of time, have always had disagreements and always will. Because the guy that delivers your ice time may or may not think that you're a very good player. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't like you. It doesn't mean anything other than, hey, I got somebody else that does the job better than you. But, you know, what I've heard a lot is that, you know, the respect or the way of doing business has to change. And I don't think that's, not even for a second do I think that is an outrageous goal to have.
No, I mean, it seems reasonable.
We were all spoken to in a way that they just wouldn't talk to the players today. And it just was. I mean, like, I didn't even think anything of it. It was. And now it just isn't and shouldn't be.
What are you expecting from Mitch Marner in this new system, Sheldon Keefe? he's had, you know, he didn't have a great summer with the contract. He didn't play that well 5-on-5 before he got injured.
He got a $65 million contract.
Right.
Summer turned out
let
okay.
Let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
The PR machine was not churning in his direction. Right. Let's put it that way. But now I almost feel like this injury gives him a fresh start on the whole season, and they need him. Like, you've noticed that many times.
We talked about the record they need coming down the stretch here, 33-21 to possibly get in. That's no joke.
I think he, I mean, I can't imagine he's not thrilled to get back into this system. Like, there was a goal in the game I did on Friday, guys. I think Tavares scored it. But Zach Hyman had the puck right outside the blue line, and he was going to dump it in.
Yeah. Back to Riley.
Yeah, but I'm like, it was Zach Hyman who you would think would go plunge it forward and go chase after it and forecheck. And he's like, oh, we're supposed to regroup. Like, how do you think that's going to play with Mitch Marner? He's going to love it. He's going to love it. Like,
yep.
I don't know. I would like to play in this system. Yeah. Even though we didn't have a system, I didn't even know what the heck we did. We just kind of played. Love to have this system.
You're way out of the curve, Ray. They freed you right up. You just get to play. You don't have to think about anything out there. But yeah, for an offensive guy whose inclination is to try to make plays always anyways, and to be put into a system where you're maybe somehow told, occasionally told not to, would stifle that. Yeah, you'd think it would.
It's almost made for
it
him.
It would fit perfectly for a guy with his game and his mind.
Now, the ankle injury is, you know, will probably be somewhat bothersome for him for a little bit of time. I'm sure there'll be a time where he catches his ankle and goes out and is worried that he's really hurt himself. But that'll sort itself out in a week or two. And look, the kid's a fabulous player, right? Like, what did he have last year? Over 90 points, and it's not like all of a sudden he's a 50-point guy. I think as soon as he's healthy and back up and running, and you know, and back in the groove, that we'll see Marner-like numbers from it.
What do you think about, I know it's early and it's just practice, but Sheldon Keefe keeping Mikheyev up on the line with Tavares and Marner and putting Hyman down to the third line with Kerfoot and Kapanen, breaking up before they even get going the trio of Marner, Tavares, and Hyman from last year?
Well, it's funny. I look at Hyman on a third line, and I think that's kind of where he fits.
Right.
You know, like that's where he should be. Yet he's been so successful, and really has been, as being like the worker bee on that line, on the Tavares line, Matthews line the year before. I would say they probably didn't have as many options, and Mikheyev looks like a guy can. Well, he won't be the same player as Hyman. He looks like a guy that skates well enough, will get in on a forecheck, will create some, you know, some disadvantages with his speed and length. You know, he's a long guy. I think he can be a good fit there. Doesn't mean it's forever, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, heck, he might look at that for two games and go, nope.
Right.
Nice idea in my office, not a good idea today.
Well, it seems like a bunch of people are getting together and talking about situations that might look good, as opposed to before getting back to Babcock. It was his way, and that's it. And Zach Hyman's the best forechecking left winger on earth, and he's on the first line, and it's never changing, and that's what he thought. And that's the difference. It seems like people are talking and generating ideas to what could work and be different. But with him, it was like, no, that's my decision. And he had the ability to do that, and that's the way it played out.
Well, I would, you know, I'm not defending anybody here, because I'm going to get back to your point right now in a seco, but, like, lots of head coaches like to have all of the decision. And I think what you're talking about, this collaboration, this approach, this fits with what the staff of, and what Kyle Dubas's idea is for management. It's that there are more people involved, more people, you know, throwing an idea or a piece into the puzzle. The game I did Friday, so the Leafs are down a goal and they pull the goalie. And they've got an offensive zone faceoff, and Paul McFarland's drawing on the board. And I pointed it out in the game because it struck me as so different, because all of this year, when there was pulled goalie, Babcock drew on the board.
Or like the bench, like a cool guy.
Yeah, he was coaching the whole bench. And everybody else, you know, Dave Haxtell and Paul McFarland were the assistants. Like, it was very clear. And if you look at most teams, when the assistant coach or when there's a timeout, it's one of the assistants drawing. The head coach looks like he's standing there, you know, looking around the rink. Because each guy has a part of the game that they're supposed to specialize in, each coach. And I found that to be a real notable difference the other night.
Play mind reader for us here. Mark Bergevin, the GM of the Habs. What's he thinking right now?
Oh, nothing good.
Thanks. It can't be, right?
Like, I look at them and they're kind of a train wreck right now. Mm-hmm. They've given up, what, 35 goals in 8 games? The 0-5-3. You know, they're up 1-0. They give up the Pastrnak goal. They can't kill a penalty ever.
No, they're young, they're small, and they don't have elite talent. They have some with, obviously, Weber, who's not Weber of elite talent Weber, and they have Carey Price, who's not that of Carey Price elite talent. So that's what you're going to get. That's what they are. So
yeah, and you're paying them $20 million.
Well, that's the problem, Ray. Right? They're committed to those two guys who are in their 30s for $20 million for 3, 4, 5 more years. More than that with Carey Price, they can't rebuild. They can't strip it down and take 4 years because those two guys won't be good in 4 years.
They got Shea.
So
Weber,
what are they
going to
do?
10 more. What are you talking about?
Weber?
Oh yeah.
Weber's got 4 years,
four
I think.
Yeah. I think Carey's got 7.
Carey Price got 7, and so you're like, where are you going to go? Like, what are you going to do? They don't have an elite scorer. You know, they've got, you know, Brendan Gallagher's an excellent player.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't be your best right winger. You know, so you got Kotkaniemi, who's just a kid. Suzuki's just a kid. Like, it's hard to make that kind of impact that they need. And right now, they look like they're floundering. They kept talking. They're scoring by committee. That's like when you have we've got 2 really good goalies or 2 really good quarterbacks. That means you don't have 1 really good quarterback. They don't have a scorer. Offense is going to be a problem for them. What's really become the biggest problem in my mind is we knew the offense was going to be like that. Defensively, they're not great. They can't kill a penalty to save their life. And their goalie has fallen off the map. And I don't know which is the most important, but they're not going to wallpaper around Carey Price.
They just call up Caden Primo.
Right.
So, there you go. We'll see.
Can you imagine that? Okay, kid, go
get in
have
there.
At her.
Yeah. Find a way, because they need
by
a
the
win.
By the way, we had Keith Primo last year at the World Juniors, and he's a nervous wreck, as you can imagine, when his kid's playing goal, right? And he's good. Like,
really
Keith Primo
is
outstanding. And, but I'm like, man, there are no easy nights for a goalie's dad.
No kidding. In Montreal.
And they have the Islanders tomorrow. Avalanche Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Good luck in Montreal. All right, buddy.
That could end up at 10 in a hurry, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you that might be it. I mean, at the end of the year, you could look back and say November cost us. Early December. We'll see. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Talk to you then, boys.
Here's Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. For all of December, receive a $500 gift certificate to Vaughn Mills when you purchase or lease any new stock vehicle. Maple Toyota, right next to Wonderland.